The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Cycle Vertical podcast. It's me, Andy Kirkpatrick, back again. I'm in my orifice upstairs, and the family downstairs. So Vanessa's got like about a week to go until this baby pops out. So she's downstairs tidying up or something. So you might hear some like banging and things. Hopefully there's no children banging on the door to be let in. It's funny when you're like I'd have to give birth, but it's kind of funny when you're coming towards the point when this baby's going to come out. Like you tend not to think about it. You're just trying to kind of you don't want to think about it. So, but it's a little bit like getting on a roller coaster, and the roller coaster is like slowly going up the hill. You know, it's going up before it drops down the other side. And like once you're on a roller coaster, you can't get off it. You just have to stay on it, but you don't know at what point the roller coaster is gonna go over the top. So it's, you know, you're just waiting for that when it's like, oh, my waters have broken, and it's suddenly like, ah. So it's it's a really weird. Is it? I guess you call it like a phony war. This sort of part of, you know, of having a baby. So. Yes, it'd be kind of interesting to see how all that turns out. But it's like a lot the stoical attitude of you just deal with what you can deal with. Like I do find myself a lot of the time saying to Vanessa, probably saying to myself, I don't focus on the things that you can't deal with. You know, you can't change, and also don't focus on things that haven't happened yet, you know, I suppose you can strategize how you can, you know, like what happens if this baby comes and he doesn't sleep, and it's just like, well, don't worry about it. Like, you'll just have to work it out if that happens, or what if Noah tries to murder him or something, or murder her, so her anyway. So, this baby's going to be called Isla because all my children have to have two syllable names, and four letters. So it's Ewan, Ella, Noah, and Isla. So, because of course it's got such a long second name, I don't have enough room on forms and stuff. If you have a baby, like, yeah. The other day I was pushing Noah on this swing, and there was a mum next to me with her child, and I was like talking about babies' names, and we're having this conversation about babies' names. Then for Noah, and I suddenly said to Noah, like, oh, do you want me to push you higher, Cornelius? And the woman was like, oh, that's a nice name. I was like, that's not actually his name. I just made that up. So I think Cornelius, he's like one of the apes out of Planet of the Apes. So that's why I always think about Cornelius. I did once meet someone, they had two kids. One was called Labyrinth and one was called Raven. So kind of interesting. On the subject of I was listening to a podcast the other day, and it had real proper sections like media corner and all that kind of stuff. So I was thinking I should make this into like a magazine type podcast where I have like little like ning nang ning now media corner or something like that, and But yeah, I probably won't. What's in my media corner? What have I been doing this week? What's my media corner? I've just finished reading Solaris by Thingy Lem, whatever his name is, that Russian fella. Interesting book. It's got some really strong bits in it, and it's just it's very interesting. I think it's probably a man book. I think because it's quite a lot of it is. I don't know. It's very interesting how it's written. It's written as almost like a, you know, it's like referencing all these books and material produced by these expeditions to the planet of Solaris. I've not really read much science fiction. I've read Dune a few times, but not reading much science fiction. I used to have this. I once had a cleaner. This is a long time ago. Because we both work. Me and my ex-wife, we both worked full time, and we had like two kids. So we had this like someone used to come and clean up our house, which was, oh god, it was terrible. I think I was mentally ill at the time. So I remember I once said to her, like, oh, do you like Lord of the Rings? And she said, oh, it's a bit too far-fetched for me. And not Harry Potter, that was it. Like Harry Potter. No, it's a bit too far-fetched. Wasn't Don Willans when he was on expedition with Greg Child and someone was reading Lord of the Rings and they give it to Don Willans to read, and he was like, oh, what do you think, Don? He went, fucking fairies. One thing I was thinking in my new podcast format, which is not going to happen, is I should do Instagram Corner, where I try to explain what the hell I'm talking about sometimes on Instagram, because people get very confused. I'm always on the verge of like going back off Instagram, but because it is such a distraction, and it is some, like I was Googling. I was Googling translations of 1001 Tips, because you get all these translations of your books, but you basically never get paid for them, which is kind of, you have to basically get a good advance if you're doing like a foreign sale, but you can't really tell how many they've sold or what the hell's going on. So I was like Googling 1001 Tips, and I came across, for some reason, there was something on UK bouldering. And it was basically loads of people go. I think it was like 2018 or something, on the forum, people just going on about how I'd just become the most awful, untouchable, right wing fascist, Trump loving, you basically name it. That's what I'd become, and people were alarmed at my Instagram posts and all that kind of stuff. So I actually emailed. I had to make up a fake account because I have an account on UK Bolding, but I don't know what it is. But anyway, so I emailed one of the people who were like saying how he was shocked and appalled at how I turned into this, crazy person. And I just emailed him, and I was like, this is not me being an asshole emailing you I'm not stalking you. But I'd just be really interested if. How well I was like 4 or 5 years. 4 or 5 years on, do I still seem such a crazy person, or have you? Because I do get a lot of messages from people saying, "I used to think you were an asshole or whatever. I thought blah, blah. I thought you'd just gone mad, but actually now I don't think you are." Like I was actually having this conversation with my dad yesterday, and I was talking about this. I saw this thing where it was Jordan Peterson being interviewed by that guy. What's his awful guy? What's his name? Where he said, "Oh, do you represent incels? What we call them? Men who sit in their sort of bedrooms watching pornography and playing computer games." Sounds like a good life to me. And Jordan Peterson's like, yeah. yeah, why not, you know? And he's like tearing up. It's a very emotional bit of video. And my dad was kind of really surprised when I was telling him about this. I think my dad listens to this podcast, so I do apologize if this is not true. But my dad, a lot of people, they have these views of people that are just based on secondhand information. They don't actually ever go and sit. If they look at a video of this person, say, oh, I'm going to look at this video on the Guardian website, and you'll see this like edited video where they just make this person look absolutely, awful. But if you actually listen, like this Lex Fridman podcast with Jordan Peterson I listened to recently, Christ almighty, like that's got to be one of the best podcasts I've ever listened to. It was like just so, this is a, you live in a world where everything is just so thin, it's just, there's no real substance to anything really. And this is like a conversation where it's so dense and it's so weighty and healthy, and it's kind of how things, I feel like that's how things used to be in the past, where now it's just this veneer of something. So I said to my dad, like, you should go and, I think my dad had this impression that, I thought Jordan Peterson was like Goebbels or something. I was like, no, you need to go and I think someone like Jordan Peterson often comes across in a certain way because he's always on guard, because everyone's always trying to get that kind of gotcha. What was that thing when someone said to him, do you believe in God? And he said, I act as if I do. And they're like, ah, got you. Yeah. which is actually the best way to. It's like, do you believe in monogamy? It's like, oh, well, I act as if I do, it's in front of my wife. No, but you have to, I don't know. It is really sad. It's sad when there are people who really have something. I even one of my heroes, I would say, is like Brett Weinstein and Heather Hine, and I can't think of someone who would be a kinder, nicer, more like totally left wing, progressive, blah blah blah, everything that we're told you should aspire to, that these people really represent that. But yeah, I've mentioned they wrote this book, The Hunter-Gatherer's Guide to the 21st Century, which is a great book. And I've mentioned it to people, and it's like, oh yeah, I've heard about them. And basically, they've read a review on The Guardian or some website. And they've just, someone's just completely, slandered them, basically, and just said that these are like despicable human beings. And so, yeah, so the people who were... Are the people who were really supposed to think are, the truth, people we should trust and, good people. Like, who? I wonder who would they be? I guess I don't know. But it's it's very like I've a lot of my stuff on Instagram is about, I think it's about sense making. Is our sense making apparatus is being, sort of subverted, or like almost everything I think is the other way around. Like good people are bad and healthy food is bad and all that kind of stuff. It's all subjective, isn't it? Like it's whatever works for you. But I think unless you really do some research into it, you're never gonna, you're never gonna really understand what's it. I was like, there's some quote I could use here about if you don't understand your enemies, blah blah blah. Anyway, but I feel like that it's getting harder and harder to find those. Like I was really interested in Holocaust denial. I wasn't really interested in like the denial of the Holocaust, but I was interested in the whole subject of Holocaust denial. When you're in the Middle East, basically if you believe in the Holocaust, then you're the one who's crazy. So, and it's probably, that's probably the same. I would say like anti-Semitism is like the default setting in probably most of the world. Like, it's definitely the default setting, I would say, in the Middle East, in Eastern Europe still. Like, I always have this thing that, this viewpoint that the Holocaust was a way of saying to future generations, oh, this was this, like, one moment in time when this terrible thing happened and now it's over. When really, the persecution of the Jews and stuff, you know, it was going on for centuries and still goes on and stuff. And so it's almost like it's like a logjam in actually trying to understand the subject. And like when I went to Poland, I was like really shocked at the whole kind of Holocaust tourism and all that kind of stuff. It's a really interesting subject, and trying to understand, like, I think often you get people who have an interest in something, and the reaction they get is so out of proportion to their interest in it. It actually makes them double down, and like there must be, if you, again, back to the Kanye West thing I mentioned in the last podcast, you know, the fact that this person has been like utterly destroyed for making a remark, which is probably something that rests in the heads of lots of Americans, is almost more disturbing than what he actually said. So, you know, a lot of the stuff on my Instagram is about maybe sometimes I'll just put in a quote and I won't actually say who it's from, because it's actually a really good quote. But if you said it was from, you know, somebody, the wrong person, or from a source that has been deemed, you know, to be evil, then people won't take the time to try and absorb it and try and see if there's anything in there that's of interest. So I once had a picture, I used to have an Instagram account that had like 14,000 followers, and I deleted that one. So now I've got one that's about 700 followers, which is completely fine. And I'm actually trying to like lose followers. That's the way to try and stay sane in this world, to try and get people to not like you, not the other way around. And I think I had a picture of AOC from America. If you don't know who she is, then I can't pronounce her name. Anyways, AOC. And it was a picture of her, you know, Hispanic, sort of, you know, progressive politician, blah, blah, young woman, blah, blah, blah. And it was this quote about the rich and, you know, and you're like, like the bastards, and they're taking everything, and what about the poor people, blah, blah, blah. And then at the end, it was from Joseph Goebbels. And he's like, damn, you tricked me. So, but it is kind of interesting especially, you know, this thing about staying in your lane is, I've wrote a few things about how the outdoors is not racist, and outdoor people aren't racist, and they have no animus towards minorities, and they actually would like bend over backwards to help anybody, you know, gay, black, disabled, whatever. Like they actively, you know, it makes them feel better about themselves, you know. So I've done quite a few things about how, you know, this is like really a negative, you know, this is not good, this is going to actually make things worse, and it's going to make people more militant. And I said about how these kind of woke things can sort of contaminate institutions like the BMC and Kendall Film Festival, and suddenly almost everything is about, you know, some black fucking boulderer who's trying to find their place in fucking bouldering. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just like, and you can't make fun of it. You can't criticize it, you know, because then you're part of the problem, blah, blah, blah. So I've written a few things about that, and people are always like, oh, what do you know about it? You know, like, you know, stay in your lane. It's like, well, I've been climbing for about fucking 45 years, and I've worked in all these for things, and you know, there's probably not many people who know more about it than I know. So like, if I'm not allowed to sort of question it, like, you know, so that's, I think that's you know, that's kind of the, you know, but I do feel like sometimes my role in climbing is to be that man, you know, that guy, like the asshole who is a pain in the the side of everybody, pain in the ass to everybody. And you know, this thing on this forum, it's like, why can't he just stick to talking about climbing? Like, why does he have to, you know, start going off on about, you know, like immigration or, you know, all these things? But like a lot of the, like, you know, this thing recently, so David Icke is basically being classed as a terrorist, which is kind of disturbing. It's like, is he like a class three terrorist? So you can't travel to any European country, I don't think, outside of the UK. I'd have to look into it. But, you know, it's a sad state of affairs when fucking David Icke is a terrorist. You know, it's really, you know, there's you know, if someone like him is a real threat, then I would say that the people who were supposed to be making sense of these things, like the media, are not doing their job. Because if people really trusted these people, then they wouldn't be listening to David Icke. But, you know, like often, like when I look at the news, like I'll probably look at the BBC website like 3 or 4 times a day. And I generally will be thinking almost everything that I'm reading is probably not what's going on, or it's what they want you to think is going on, but really it's not, like, it's not quite like that. So it's almost like a barometer of like what's not really going on. Like some things are really, you know, a given like a huge amount of exposure, and other things, you know, other things aren't. Like, there's a lot of stories about Iran, which I find kind of worrying, you know. And you'll sort of point out to people, like, this woman actually, you know, you can see she wasn't actually beaten up and died of her injuries. Like, she did actually have a heart attack. You can see the stuff about it. Like, it, that, you know. And they say, well, it doesn't matter if that's not true, because this has happened, or this is, and it's you know, so it is. I guess we live in, you know, people talk about post-truth. I guess that's where we're, you know, it's the people who go on about like how terrible it is we live in a post-truth world are actually the ones who are making it fucking post-truth, because it's, you know, it's just like poet, which doesn't matter if it's not true, but it, as long as it's like, you know, serves this, the you know, the poetry, the poetic truth of these things, that's what really matters. But it's, you know, it's, you can't really base your, you know, your future. I think I'm probably having kids makes me more concerned about these things. Like, in a perfect world, I'd just be talking about climbing and none of this kind of shite. But it does kind of bleed into everything. You know, eventually it comes knocking on your door. So it's you know, so yeah, like I always hope that I will be proved to be wrong about. Like, I don't know what's going on, but I know that something's going on, and you know, there's something bad's going on. But I hope I'm wrong, you know. And then people just say, "Oh, that guy said that something bad is going on, and nothing happened, so everything was fine." So that's it would be good to, I guess what happens is you eventually, you know, like old people, like I don't care, you know, they just kind of switch off. They do care really, but they're like, I don't care. And I think you just have to. I think you have to care. You have to keep fighting, even if you're fighting for the wrong thing. You have to keep going through this like process of analyzing all your thoughts and everything, and not to be afraid. I think maybe in the past people were less afraid to say crazy shit, you know. And then you could be like, you know, in the last podcast I was saying about, I don't think you should be able to vote unless you pay tax, you know. So then I'd have a conversation with my, which is not like a fully formed opinion. It's just, you know, it's like you shouldn't be able to vote unless you've been in the army, you know, unless you've, you know, to become a citizen and all that kind of stuff. Like, these are like old fashioned ideas, but they're kind of, they came about probably for a good reason. But I was talking to my brother-in-law, who's like a barrister, and he, you know, he so with, you know, you bring this thing up, and he'll have an opinion, I'll have an opinion, and he'll talk about it, and it'll modify your thing. And that's what you're supposed to do. Like, if you don't voice these things, then they just metastasize inside your brain, you know, and you really need to, you know. So my brother-in-law is like really, really pro-life, but he comes at it as from a legal point of view, because he's a barrister, that like an unborn child deserves to have rights. You know, we're all talking about human rights. Well, it is a human, and it needs to be protected, and all this kind of stuff. It's not just it's not just something you just dispose of. So when I first met him, I thought he was crazy. I thought, like, you're one of these like religious nut jobs. He is a religious nut job, but he is it's a legal point of view. But you can have some really good conversations with him. And I've modified my opinion on abortion, and he hasn't. I often put forward the opinions on abortion from someone who is actually pro-choice, and whether he does, he might not agree with me, but I think it's important to see why. Because I always say to him, like, you know, by bringing religion into it, it's like really counterproductive to your argument, because that ought, in the mind of atheist people, like in the UK, that would just kind of negate anything you say after that point, because they think you're crazy. So, and again, it's the same thing, like who's saying it. Like if it was a priest saying it, people aren't gonna trust what they're saying. But if it's, if it's a priest talking about morals, we won't. But if it was like Stephen Fry talking about morals, they'd be like, oh, yeah, yeah. So it's very, it's who says it. That's the important. Or if it was like the Vicar of Dibley saying about it with her upside down cross on her neck, they might get it. So it's, I don't know. Anyway, so I was only going down this stupid rabbit hole because I wrote something on Instagram this week, and I thought I might quickly mention it before I get onto something more interesting. So I wrote this. I watched the film Torn by Max Lowe about Alex Lowe. I don't know if you've seen it. I think it's on Disney Plus, however you call it. So I wrote this little. I wrote this little thing, and I'll read it out. See what you think. So, finally got around to watching Max Lowe's film Torn, which I've been putting off for a good reason. Although I was only ever 1% of the climber Alex was. Being a dad and doing dangerous shit as my kids grew up gives me some insight into what Alex was going through, and later, Conrad Anker. It's also been strange having another round of kids later in my life, in my 50s, at a point in life where life means more than it did in my 20s and 30s. My relationship with my kids, old and new, and my wife actually means more to me than climbing now. In brackets, a truth that's only real if it can be demonstrated by real sacrifice, the sacrifice of ambition rather than them. Otherwise, it's just words. One thing I felt about Alex was he was never able to become a reformed climber, a recovering narcissistic asshole. His story was only part writ, and in dying, ended up unfinished. In the film, you can see he was a stranger to his kids. They're just background to his life, him, a walk-on part in theirs. And he knew it. You can see it in his face. Yet he still couldn't stop. I once said that what can keep you alive as a parent who climbs is a thought of your children crying outward and in for minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, years, a lifetime. But that's the thing. You wouldn't have to. You'd be dead. So Alex, actually, Conrad Anker actually replied to this. He said, if you've climbed El Cap or projects larger and earned a paycheck from climbing, you're 99% the climber Alex was. No self-depreciation. We are what we are in this stage of life. To base your character assessment on a 90-minute film is your choice. Alex wasn't a narcissistic asshole. He was just there for his family and community. Gravity and the pitfalls it brings was his calling. But your measure parents that climb are labelled with some pretty tough standards, yours included. I did reply, what did I write? I don't think Alex was a narcissistic asshole, like all climbers. I loved Alex, or you. But my point is, I think Alex had begun to view himself as a narcissistic asshole. You can see it in his eyes. His life was a performance. The mountain's a stage. or some more poetic variation of the same thing. And deep down, I'm sure you felt the same about yourself. In brackets, I'm not a mind reader, but you can feel the weight on your shoulders, the responsibility not to die and fuck up or a fucked up situation even more. It's not easy to write about these things on social media, but behind all the poetic words and the histrionics, there's a great deal of damage done to the people who love us or loved us. And although we there can take the pain and make something beautiful from it, a film, a relationship like yours and Jennifer, the damage is deep and permanent. Torn is a great film, but the truth of it would be unwatchable. But maybe some of us need to imagine that film. Now off to paint my baby daughter's bedroom. So I'm not sure if Conrad ever saw that reply to it, because that's how social media works. But yeah, it's funny. I was the one reason why I don't like Instagram and social media is everything I ever write on it, I do actually find it sort of physically painful, and I really dwell on anything, on any offence that I make to people or upset them, or I'll just be thinking about one stupid comment that, you know, one the wrong word or something, and so I'm thinking like, should I did it? Because I guess for me, watching that film, I think it's very easy to excuse the sort of the damage you do to your kids and to your, you know, I think to my ex-wife, and it makes you think about getting old as you start questioning all the things, you know, that you did in your life, and you're much more critical of them than you were at the time. I think it's like, it's very easy to say, well, what if Alex or Comrade Anchor had been in the, you know, in the army, or what if they'd been working offshore or whatever? But I think it's just not the same, because it's not as dangerous. Like, if you had, you know, an equivalent number of soldiers going off and dying in the same percentages as Himalayan mountaineers, you know, you'd lose the war. The war would end because you'd have lost it. And it's just kind of the unrelenting nature where you're just doing like one trip after the other, which is actually kind of a modern phenomenon. Like in the past, you know, people might have, you know, done a big expedition once in their life, you know, and, you know, the people who went to climb Everest, you know, how many expeditions did Edmund Hillary do afterwards? He did some, but he didn't do that many of that, you know, that danger, where some people are doing those sort of three times a year, and they're eventually gonna get them, basically. So it isn't normal. And I think there were some things in the film where after Alex Lowe had died, they kept on filming as if they were going to make a documentary of it or something. And it's just kind of very uncomfortable. It's kind of sick, basically. Like, this person, these two people have just died, and they're just like filming, you know, Conrad's having his bandages changed just the day after, and they're filming him and asking him all these questions. And it's just kind of a bit, it's kind of a, like, they probably obviously think they're like, you know, they've got that kind of war photographer mentality, like, oh, this is, you know, this is a serious business, and we have to capture everything no matter how awful it is. But it's not, it's like a climbing holiday, you know, it isn't like that. And I think I find that increasingly, I notice that more and more in films. Like, we watched, I think when that film finished, like Solo came on with Alex Honnold, and there's part of me that thinks like, this is kind of a little bit too, this is some of it's like, it's not like a snuff movie, is not too bad because it's real. I'm not talking about Alex climbing El Cap, that's not the snuff part, but it's kind of manipulative of like, oh, let's get a little bit of you know, let's get this girlfriend to cry, and it's too I can't think of what the word is, but it's something not nice. It's exploitative, really, of the of the people, and they'll kind of go along with it, because that's what people do. Like, you know, it's like Bush Tucker trial or something. Like, people will really debase themselves for the camera, and the camera, the director knows that, and it's basically not right, I don't think. So I think if you were writing about it, that's different. But anyway, so I was thinking about, you know, like, being the asshole. Like, was I wrong to say that? But sometimes you feel like everyone would just be like, oh, that's a beautiful film, and Alex Loy was amazing, and so is Karen Anker. But I often feel like it's my place to. Hardly anybody's going to read it or see it anyway, so it doesn't really. It's not like I'm, you know, like publishing my opinion anywhere of any value. But I do feel like you do need people to. Like your David Icke's, basically, you know, even if they're crazy, you do need those people around to do you know, the people who walk around, used to walk around. so, you know, when I was a kid, you had the people walking around with these placards saying, like, the world was going to end, and, you know, the rapture was going to come, and everyone just thought they were crazy, but no one ever hassled them. They just let them get on with it. Now those fucking people are everywhere. Like every child has been made into one of those fucking crazy people. So, and every, like, old age pensioner as well, apparently. You know, like, people, you know, people who've had, like, you know, 70-year-old, someone who's just retired, they've spent their whole life, like, lugging down oil and gas and, you know, getting this massive pension, and they can just buy the VW van and drive around Europe doing whatever the hell they want. Now they're telling, you know, my kids that you can't have any, they can't have a car, and sort of wankers. Anyway, so so anyway, but the you know, you really need those people. I think I look back at climbing. You had Ken Wilson, you had Jim Beyer, you had these, like, crazy people who were just a pain in the arse of, like, the status quo. Who, like, why don't we just bolt everything? Because it'll be safer. And you need, you know, climbers are all racist. Like, we need to, you know, there was something, and it was I think it was on Instagram. It was like the guide association saying we need more women guides. There's hardly any women mountain guides, and I put a comment saying, we should have a moratorium where white men can apply to be a guide for like 5 years, and we need to bring in more minorities, and we shouldn't let white women do it either. It should be, like, you know, and also get, you know, it shouldn't be anyone straight. So just because you're a woman, you know, if you're white and you're straight, you shouldn't be allowed to do it. And I did this big long comment, you know, and we need like a 50-50. You know, guides should reflect, like, the, you know, the makeup of the you know, of the country. Anyway, so the guides association, they, like, liked my comment because they thought I was being on it, being real. I was being, you know, it's a real opinion. But yeah, that's the thing, you can't really tell what's stupid and what's, you know, what was taking the piss and what's actual, someone's being genuine, like, genuine thing. So yeah, I don't know what my point was really, but it is I think you have to try and give the impression that you don't really care, but the fact that you're making the effort to say something means you do care. Otherwise, you wouldn't bother. And I think often people say I've got, like, thin skin. And I think it's just part of caring too much. Like, I remember working with someone who was doing, like, a tour, doing talk speaking, and it was pretty dreadful. And we'd written this the copy for the to go in theatre brochures, And he was like, this is a roller coaster ride of adrenaline, blah, blah. It just wasn't. It was just terrible. Like he took no pride in being on a stage. It was just, let's get through it and get to the end as soon as possible and just get the cash, you know, sell some books or whatever. So it was pretty dire. Anyway, someone wrote a letter to us saying, like, I took my son to this slideshow and we were really excited, and it was, you know, it was expensive, and it was like, you know, £15 or something each, and it was like dreadful, and you know, it was like really, really, really terrible. Anyway, so we maybe we shouldn't have done this, but we forwarded it to the speaker, and he was like, I don't care, and that was it. Like, and he just knew, he just didn't care. He's like, tell him to fuck off, you know. Where I would have just, that would have been it for me. I would have just like stopped doing it, or I would have just like every kind of criticism, really, like, sort of like, I guess it makes you try harder next time. And I think maybe one of my problem is because I've got a limited amount of time, and it's kind of pointless. Like you could often write a very long, like, I think I wrote a very long article trying to defend the outdoor, you know, outdoor people against being racists. And, you know, you spend a long time writing it, but you kind of think, what's the point, really? Because no one's going to read it who thinks that they are racist. And a lot of people who would read it, who know they're not racist, they know they're not racist. So what's the point, really? You might as well just, it's more like a guerrilla campaign, I guess. It's just to keep being a pain in the arse. And, you know, like someone said, like I recently stopped taking in money on my Substack. So originally I was probably making about 500 euros a month through Substack, because you have lots of people subscribing to it. Like, you know, I have lots of people subscribing to it, but then some people pay a little bit of money. So it's a significant amount of money. And then I wrote something about how the Kendall Film Festival and a lot of film festivals were being sort of captured because of the way the funding works. They have to suddenly have all these, you know, everyone has to be talking about climate change. Everyone has to be talking about, you know, representation and all that kind of stuff. And it's a lot of it's to do with funding, how the funding's, you know, works. But anyway, so straight away I lost like 50% of subscribers, just disappeared. So your income from writing went down. And it's kind of a form of punishment. It's corrective. It's like, if you do this again, you know, if you stop doing things like this, and maybe we'll come back. If you just stick to what we want you to do. So I don't want to be restricted by writing stuff that's going to please people, because that's why the newspapers are in such a state, because they're afraid to write anything that's going to upset the readers or undermine what they've been saying in the past. So which eventually means that no one reads newspapers anyway. They'll all just sort of cancel their subscription. So anyway, so I actually just switched off all the monies. So I can just do what I want. I can just write what I want, and it's free. So you can get upset by it, but you're not, a bit like this podcast, really. You know, you're free to come and go. I can say one thing, and that can discount everything I've ever said. You know, I could do 100 podcasts, I'll say one thing, and that's it, you've lost that person. But that's the way it goes. Like, maybe that person will come back, maybe later on they'll think, I think I had something about Elon Musk. I think I was saying something that why whenever you see a picture of Elon Musk, say on the BBC website, he's always in a dicky bow and tie or something. He always looks like a toff, which is very rare to have ever seen him like that in real life. And I think, like, someone like Elon Musk is like an incredible person, and someone, you know, especially young people should really try and understand, like, what he's doing and everything else. But people will be like, no, he's a capitalist pig, blah, blah, he's a evil person. He's gonna, you know, so you're trying to, you know, you're trying to point out that this, that your sense making is being warped by just by the use of the images on a website, how they use, how the language, the way the, you know, structure sentences, everything else, the words they use, is trying to give, make you think a certain way about a person without you ever having listened to that person or listened to them talk or understood what they're actually trying to do. And I actually did have one person reply much later on saying, I actually went away and actually read up on Elon Musk and what he's doing and everything else, and you were right, like he isn't who I thought he was. So I guess it's back to that Jordan Peterson thing. It's the same thing, is that for some reason, I try and understand why we're being sort of, our opinions are being formed in a certain way by certain people who, I guess, they're not playing the game. Are they really? You know, they're not playing the game. That's the problem. They're a hazard and a danger to the game being played. You know, like if they don't play the game, what's going to happen? You know, the game's going to, you know, the game's, you know, there's rules to this. Like, you're supposed to stick to them. And if you stick to them, then you might get more money on your Substack, and you might get more followers, and you upset anybody, and people say nice things about you, you'll sell more books. And I think someone was saying that they, because they'd made fun of, I think it was a comedian, because they'd started being anti-Trump, they'd lost like 50% of their followers, of their fan base. And I think I've probably lost about 80% of my fan base. So, that's the price you pay, really. And but yeah, I guess it's more maybe if you didn't have such a, you know, like I've had people writing to my publisher, I've had people writing to the BMC when I was gonna make this film with Jen Randall, like basically anyone who I actually lost sort of work with the magazine, because people would like contact them and say, you can't, this person's a racist, or this person's a, you know, undesirable person, like you can't have anything to do with him. And so like sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but even if it doesn't work initially, they stand by you are kind of contaminated, and it is a risk to invest any money in someone if you're not quite sure. So you know, you often get this question of like, what are you trying to say? Can you explain here what you're actually trying to say? And that, you know, can you give a defense about what you're saying here? You know, or can you just tell other people what you're trying to say? Because I'm unsure, and if they're unsure, then maybe they think you're a bad person or something. But really, I think if you look at everything, you should be able to get an impression of somebody, what they really are. So I've talked too long now about all this kind of stuff. I suppose back to the Alex Lowe thing. I suppose I have this thought about myself. This doesn't apply to everybody else. It's like how much joy did sort of alpine climbing, you know, going on expeditions, how much joy did it really bring me? Or was it just like relief? Like relief is a kind of joy, but it's not the same. It's very like relief is very fleeting, and I guess joy is very fleeting. Like happiness is not as fleeting, but the lack of not being miserable is something that's sustainable. Of where joy and ecstasy, you know, you can't live in like you can't be ecstatic all the time. it's not good for you. So yeah, so it made me, if you look at Alex Lowe, what was his goal? was it just goals? Was that all he was, you know, he must have known he was eventually going to die doing it. I guess it gets to the heart of human endeavor, really, like what makes someone push themselves to that level and constantly, like it's a bit of a tropey thing, but you are addicted to something. I don't think what you're addicted to is adrenaline. I think you're addicted to something else. Like it almost makes everything worthless. It's like pornography, like online or pornography. It makes it worthless, basically. And it's the same with if you're just constantly climbing stuff, like really, really hard stuff. You know, you're because eventually you're gonna be not as good as you were. So it's not like you're gonna keep climbing till you're like amazing. You know, because you're basically heading towards failure, whatever you do. So, interesting. Like in the film, he talks about his kids wanted him to go to Disneyland. Like I remember, I went to Disneyland with my kids. It was fucking amazing. I didn't want to go. We went in Los Angeles, and it was probably one of the best days of my life. It was really amazing. I think we were there from 9 a.m. to 1 a.m. or something. Got our money's worth. But it was like an absolutely amazing day. And yeah, I was mainly going to talk about, because this 8-year-old climbed El Cap last week, and it's been very controversial. And I was going to talk about like climbing El Cap with Ella when she was 13. I remember getting to the top of El Cap, and that was one of my best moments in my life. Was when we were all sitting on the summit. Did we all sleep on top? I can't remember now. And Ella was absolutely wasted, but I just remember just this. Again, I guess it's relief, but it's also like you've just achieved something amazing. I've seen your child like achieve something amazing, but I guess I would probably. On the thing about when we came, I'll finish now because I think I have to go to my Vanessa's probably waters are broken by now. When we came down from El Cap, I remember we got on the bus, the shuttle bus with Ella, and we're going along, and I think I said to her on the bus like, this girl's just climbed El Capitan, and everyone's like, "Way!" And have you seen that thing? It's on YouTube, where this guy's on a bridge and there's a boat going underneath, going underneath the bridge, and it's full of like tourists. And the guy goes, "My sister's having a baby," and everyone on the boat goes, "Yay!" And he goes like, "I'm going to be a dad." not a sound. Anyway, so I was like, "Oh my." My daughter just climbed El Cap, and I was like, "Way!" All that kind of stuff. But I think they probably thought she just walked up it. I don't think he realised that she actually climbed up it. So when we got to the bridge, El Cap Bridge, Tom, who's like the famous Tom who takes the photographs, he was like, "Oh, Ella, you've climbed El Cap. You can sit in this chair. This is a special chair that you can only sit in if you've climbed El Cap," which is like a folding chair. So she sits in there, and she's like basking in the glory, and you can see El Cap, whatever. And Steve Schneider came up, who climbed El Cap with the previous youngest girl to climb El Cap, who was also 13. And he comes up, and Steve is always so stoned. So anyway, so he comes up, and he's like, "Oh, you're the youngest girl to climb El Cap." And she's like, "Really?" And because I just climbed El Cap with her because... I said that when she was 13, she could climb El Cap, because that was when the youngest girl had climbed El Cap. So I wasn't thinking about she would be the youngest. And I was like, so he's like, "Oh, you're the youngest girl to climb El Cap." And she suddenly blew up. You know, you could see her like feeling like, "Oh, this is amazing." And I said to her, like, it doesn't matter all that matters is how you feel. All that matters about how you feel about climbing El Cap. It doesn't matter about being the youngest. Like, you were just the youngest girl who had the opportunity to climb El Cap. That's all that means. It doesn't mean anything. But it's how it feels to you to have climbed El Cap. And she kind of deflated a little bit. But then she was like, no, she knew that was the only thing that really means anything. It's not about, you know, record breakers and all that kind of stuff. It's you know, what she had achieved was like a significant thing for herself. It was not a way of measuring herself against anybody else, or, you know, younger or whatever. And as an aside, actually, about a year later, she got a letter or something, or an email from the woman who was supposedly previously the youngest woman to climb El Cap, who was 13, who was now like 25 or something, like tracked down this like 13-year-old in Sheffield and sent her this message saying, actually, I was like a month younger than you, so I'm still the youngest gal. I think probably now there's like a younger girl's climbed El Cap. So it was like, so when I showed her, when I showed her the email, she was like, oh, whatever. And it didn't really matter, you know, and it didn't really. Like if you sort of tie your whole identity into this one thing, it wouldn't really mean anything. So yeah. And she'd never really climbed since. So that just shows how she was just a tourist after all. She didn't take it seriously. So yeah, I wouldn't have wanted her to suddenly be like, what are we going to do next, Dad? Can we do like El Cap in a day, or can we ski to the North Pole, or all those kind of things? Because they would probably be more down to me living what I want to do through her, really. And that's not the way to do it. So yeah, she basically got into cheerleading instead. Just got really into cheerleading. So yeah, I better go. We've got better go. Gonna go to Salt Hill, which is where the beach is. It's been raining like basically all week, and we had a big storm here. So it's probably the one day of goodish weather before the weather comes. So okay, I did have some questions. I have got some questions here. I got one about cold hands. I got one about risk, and I shall promise I shall answer those next week. Honestly, I'll get back on course, and I'll fly straight. I'll stay in my lane, and from next week. Okay, goodbye.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.